Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Harris Wishard. How you doing, Harris?
What's up, young Nick? Always good to talk to you, man. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we could put together a good show here tonight. And also, you know, I don't know, you've been following it, but 65, it got as high as 65 out here on the island and a blizzard coming our way tomorrow. So the up and down, this bipolar weather kind of reminds me of the Knicks play this season.
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. I'm over in Stanford. It was 57 today and we're supposed to get a blizzard tonight as well. So, I mean, but I'm still trying to get over the sun last Sunday. You know, this is the NBA podcast, but we have to do our diligence and talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. That looking crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, at 28-3, I turned to my friend. I kept telling him, I'm going to tell you something about this game, and he kept finishing my sentences. It's far from over. And I know you picked the Falcons, and obviously they dominated the first half and the offense.
I mean, they should have won the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. But there were some mistakes that were being made throughout that comeback that made me feel like you're just giving them too much momentum and giving Brady too many opportunities. Obviously, the strip sack comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, even when after Julio made that catch, you know, that incredible toe drag that no one's going to really talk about because they lost, they were in field goal position, and they elected to not run the ball and just, you know, stay where they are. Instead, they decided to pass the ball for no apparent reason.
Also fire their defensive coordinator today.
Yeah, and defensive line coach.
It's one of those situations. You're gonna criticize some of the play calling when you blow a 25-point lead. But it does feel like in those situations when you do have a solid running game and you have Freeman
and Coleman
and Coleman and you can control the clock, it's easy for us to sit back here and say, you know, those are obvious situations. And then we do get on people for playing not to lose instead of playing to win.
Well, I think it's a little bit different, though, in the situation they are. Like, 28-3 isn't like your regular, like, blown lead. Like, 14 or 17 points, you know what? Yeah, it happens. You know, even like 21 points, it happens. But you're up 28-3. The momentum's on your side. You literally have dominated them. But the one issue I think that really stuck out to me, I saw the stats after the game, the Patriots ran 99 offensive plays, and the Falcons ran 49 offensive plays. So the Falcons defense literally played like almost another game compared to the Patriots defense.
Unreal.
Yeah, so
the records, just when you think you've seen it all, just when you think Brady can't outdo himself, it's unbelievable. He, you know, obviously overcoming the biggest deficit, breaking the passing yards record in that game, and now the all-time leader in Super Bowl victories. This one was, I think, less – coaching, because a lot of Patriot victories, you look to the
coach. I mean, I still think it's a lot of coaching, though, because Belichick, you know, managed the clock perfectly. You know, they had these opportunities. A lot of people were, like, criticizing him at points in the game when they, like, elected to run the ball, even though they were still down so much. But they were picking up large chunks. And, I mean, the defense turned around. Like, I think a lot of people haven't really talked about the Patriots defense, but, I mean, they let up 28 points, and after that they didn't let up a single point. Mm. You know, that's kind of ridiculous if you think about it.
Yeah, and obviously make the transition to hoops.
Yeah.
In that, you know, we obviously like to measure greatness, measure dominance. And obviously the comparisons are going to come in. And I heard you hear about the Brady Jeter comparison, you hear about the Brady Jordan comparison, you hear about the Brady moving into our sport, the LeBron comparisons, the Kobe comparisons. Listen, this guy right now is creating his own legacy. That's it's really hard to compare what this group and what he individually has accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not all for that personally. Even when people like, you know, comparing Michael Jordan to NFL players, it's so much different. Mm-hmm. You know, and a basketball player like can have, I think, a larger impact on the game just to let alone because if you're playing football and you have a terrible offensive line and receivers that can't catch the ball, as a quarterback, you're not doing anything. In the NBA, we've seen LeBron carry teams to the playoffs when he was on the Cavs that really weren't very good.
I'll make two quick points about Brady, and then obviously we have a lot to get to with the league. But I like to look at guys' path and how much, you know, he was expected of him. This is a guy that on draft night was back in 2000 was unsure what his future in the league could be, and to be in this position that he's in today is astounding. It's incredible. He tells a story about he took a walk with his parents, and he was emotional. He was crying. he had his resume for, I think, an insurance company ready to go, or he did some, an architect. I don't know what he was going to be. He had no clue what his future is going to be. So it's nice to, you know, account whatever. It's just nice to see him take that sixth round, have obviously a major chip on his shoulder, as if the whole Roger Goodell commercial and how awkward that was with the 4-game suspension and all the
play-gate.
But to have that major chip on his shoulder and kind of redefine the way we look at the position, the slot receivers that he's kind of had, guys like Welker and Edelman and even the guy like Hogan comes out of nowhere. So the way he's kind of redefined that position and where he's come from, the path that he's taken to from uncertainty to not only first ballot and a Hall of Famer, but overcome the – I think this cheating aura that hangs over the Patriots' head, there's really not much you could say right now.
Yeah. I mean, as any fan, you could always bring up the cheating because there's no way around it. You still cheated. But that's for another day. Yeah. But talking about the NBA, you know, this week it came out that the Warriors owner said that he was talking to Michael Jordan. Jordan told him that 73 ain't shit with no ring. Mm. And I know, you know, you following the Warriors being a big Steph guy. What do you think about this? Do you think the 73-win season wasn't really much worth of anything because they lost and they didn't win the championship?
Let me tell you something. Michael Jordan might not only be the most competitive person in sports, he might be the most competitive person to ever exist on the planet. So anytime I was in a luncheon with John Starks, and this is like a couple years ago, Nick, and he tells this story all the time. He's like, Michael Jordan always comes up to me. And it kind of reminds you of when, like, LeBron will say, like, when he wants to get rid of all those, like, dunk tapes and stuff. These guys have these big egos. But the Starks story, Starks will say something, and Jordan, every time Jordan comes up to him, he'll say, you didn't dunk on me. You didn't dunk on me. You didn't dunk on me. Because he hates the fact that people think that that dunk in the midnight, you know, that 90s playoff run was on him. So anytime he has an opportunity, I'm sure he was rooting for the Cavs in the finals because of the 73. But anytime he has an opportunity to acknowledge that what his team or what he did or what someone did on him, the Dikembe Mutombo story when Dikembe said, you haven't gotten me yet, Mike. And then he follows, like, I think like that was in the All-Star game they were talking. And then a couple days or a couple weeks later, he gets him in a game. So anytime Jordan has a chance to take a slight, this news obviously doesn't surprise me, but it stings. It definitely stings for a team that had the most dominant regular season win-loss and wasn't able to finish. I'm sure, like Curry said, he's not going to get over game 7 anytime soon, and he's still shaking that off. So anytime Jordan's going to be, you know, want to take a jab, he's going to take a jab.
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably agree with Jordan in the sense that just like you'll remember more that the Cavs came back from 3-1 than the Warriors had a 73-win season from that season, you know what I mean? Or the fact that they lost. Like it does mean a little bit less. I think it separates you from being an all-time great team and makes you just like an all-time great regular season.
Yeah.
You know, if they had one, then you'd be like, all right, this is probably, especially if they have 1-5. You know, if they'd be in the Cavs in 5, people would have started talking about an all-time great team.
And yeah, I think and also we judge it based off the end product.
Exactly.
You know, we just mentioned, talked about the first few minutes talking about the Patriots dynasty that's had like –
and the Giants.
That's had
Patriots
different Giants. That's had different pockets. I mentioned you all the time. Every now and then I remind you of – the win-loss of this team over the last 3 years. Now with Durant, we don't know how long it's going to go. We don't know the longevity of this one. But what they've been able to accomplish, you know, it's a very tough thing to do from start to finish and to play at that level and complete it with a championship. What Jordan's teams did were special. Obviously, they missed him for 2 seasons and then completed the back end of it. But from start to finish, we look at dynasties. Is that going to be a little you know, blimp on the radar for them and a blemish on their resume and, you know, tainted a little bit? Yeah, for sure, because, you know, they have to finish. They have to finish that as, you know, losing 2 games at home. But I still think there's a lot, and especially adding KD, and he takes, you know, going back to OKC, that's going to be a great game. But adding him to this whole, you know, Warriors package is going to allow this to stretch out a little bit, and then we'll be able to kind of come to the conclusion of, you know, which dynasty was better.
Yeah, it possibly allowed – it's kind of funny and ironic in a sense that the Warriors lost in the finals and it prevented them from being an all-time great team, but it kind of aligned them up to be even a better team with Kevin Durant and, you know, having a dynasty with him because just like things just worked out perfectly. We've talked about this many times that we don't think Durant would have went to Golden State if they had won the championship. So, I mean, it's funny how things just all work out.
A point I want to make on MJ quickly too that you mentioned him. we know a lot's been a lot. LeBron has been criticized a lot of coming out and saying, the playmaker, I need this guy, I need that guy. And while I do agree that Jordan had a certain aura about him that he wouldn't do that, I want to drill this point home that everybody in this game's history has needed Hall of Fame help. And to make a point that, yes, was Jordan probably the most competitive player ever? Will we see another guy like him? No, probably not, just on the fact that, like, he took this individual responsibility as far as the team. But for him to come out, and he hasn't said anything, I just want to kind of make that point because I just know that that's what – I think the Bulls GM came out and said that of Jordan, saying that he would never come to me. And it was hard for him to get over the top too, so –
Yeah, I mean, and also he didn't have to worry about the Warriors.
Right. Yeah. He,
like, this, I mean, this is a ridiculous team. Yeah. Like, they have two MVPs on the team and they just won 73 games last season and they added the second best player in the NBA to their team.
Yeah, I know. I just think that Jordan being critical of them, and everybody's going to think that their group and their era trumps
is better
what's going on now. But the reality is it's such a hard argument to have. And, you know, just all in all, just, you know, in general, it's something that's going to make us blue in the face because I refer to Bill Simmons' Book of Basketball a lot. And, you know, I love how he compares errors. It's just something that's very difficult to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't like comparing errors. I don't like comparing players that much in general, like especially when they're playing, when they're not playing against each other, they're playing different positions. It's just, it's tough to do, and there's so many different situations. But enough about that. Let's talk about a team that is not going to win a championship this season. They are looking like a disaster, and they have the second worst record since Christmas, and that's the New York Knicks. A lot of talk this week. Phil Jackson's taking more shots at Carmelo. Melo's still about staying in New York. What do you think about this situation? What do you think about Phil Jackson and his job in New York?
First thing that comes to mind is ugly.
Yeah.
And – we know we've both been a little critical of the franchise, but, you know, the way Twitter and social media in general has changed the way just sports in general have progressed and what we're currently seeing right now is remarkable. You're talking about the GM of a team and the player personnel decision maker calling somebody out on Twitter after all of the emotional highs and lows that's been Carmelo's tenure here. It's ludicrous to me. And you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Anthony, but this is unfair.
Yeah.
And this is uncalled for me, for a guy that's has finished as a coach, has won 11 championships, and his tenure in New York has been underwhelming. I'm not going to take sides here, who's right or wrong, but this to me is the beginning of the end of Carmelo's tenure in New York. And I no longer think his heart is here. It just there's so many red flags right now. I think there's just, if anybody could hit that refresh button, if anybody could, you know, turn the system off and restart it, you know, when you're getting killed in a video game, you reset or leave the match. It just kind of feels like that right now. And this could be one of the final straws that, you know, breaks the camel's back, as they say.
Well, I think that's what you know, Phil Jackson's trying to push Carmelo out of New York. You know, he's trying to make it more difficult. And I think Woj dropped a bomb today, and he was something about Carmelo and Phil and how Melo told his teammates and some other people that, you know, he wasn't going to let Phil Jackson push him out of New York, that he wanted to stay. But if things keep going like this and the season's just terrible, it just makes more sense for Melo to leave. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the Knicks aren't going to go anywhere. They're not doing very good. It makes more sense for the Knicks, too, to just play their young guys. You know, give Porzingis more shots, Hermann Gomez more shots, you know, and just start moving forward.
It's just an amazing world we live in right now.
And all this does, and you know what the thing is, Phil Jackson's in charge of the team and all that, and he's just lowering the value of Carmelo Anthony. When he's, you know, causing this mayhem and there's chaos and everybody knows the Knicks are a mess, you know, you're not offering them your best deal. You know they want to get rid of Melo. You know Phil Jackson doesn't like him. He's obviously made it apparent.
No, 100%. And like I said, it's a crazy world we live in. This guy's criticizing this. I mean, obviously LeBron's been in the forefront about these love Melo rumors, but him calling Frank Isola trash, this guy, him and Barkley going at it, KD and Russ Westbrook going at it, Phil Jackson, Melo going at it. And what like I continue to mention, what social media has done, and just it just feels like the world we live in today, it's guys are, you know, Twitter fingers, and it's all this controversy through the media, and it's distasteful, to be honest, as a basketball fan, no?
Yeah, I mean, if I was a basketball fan, if I was a Knicks fan, I'd be pissed. Like, it's such an ugly look. It just looks so bad for your franchise. It's looked so bad in the past. Phil Jackson was supposed to come here and, you know, turn this team around. Obviously, like, a few things haven't gone his way. He did draft Porzingis, but still, like, the team signed a great position, and some of that's his fault. Like, he signed Joakim Noah to that terrible four-year, $72 million contract. Noah right now looks like a bench player at best, you know, the way he's playing. And obviously, Rose isn't living up to himself. He's been injured, so he's just going to end up leaving. And, you know, we'll talk about Melo a little bit more. Where do you think he could go? You know, Boston, Cavs, Clippers have been the team. What do you think if he leaves?
Yeah, I mentioned on the last show how I didn't know if Boston was the right destination just because –
Boston, I heard, is not really quite as interested because, you know, Clippers. They're more interested in Jimmy Butler and Paul George.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah, that's for sure. And both those guys younger also.
Yeah.
And I think they need to go in a younger direction. The team that has – and we mentioned this early in the season – the team that has nothing really to lose is the Clippers, because I feel like this is their opportunity to go for it. And with Paul and Melo mentioning the fact that they've wanted to play together, I don't know if the Clippers are willing to part with those with their big three. So I don't know if the Knicks
– I don't know how they would
– attracted to those assets.
Yeah, that would be the tough part because, I mean, I don't think the Clippers would want to let go of anybody in their big three. So they'd have to find a third team and figure some things out, and they might have to give up, like, some other guys. But also, like,
but it does, if you think about it, it kind of does make sense, though.
No, I could see how it would make sense. You know, the Melo and Chris Paul relationship is pretty important. I read something, I saw somebody mention this, that it wasn't LeBron or Wade talking at Melo's wedding, it was Chris Paul. So obviously that has some value. That's a good relationship right there. And I mean, and like you said, it's kind of do or die for the Clippers in the sense that they kind of know their big three is going to break up at the end of the season if they don't have a successful playoff run.
And they would get some, you know, kick in the arm if Paul came back healthy, and then adding a Melo to that mix, it would kind of give them some serious juice.
It would be really intriguing to see Melo play on a good team. I mean, the teams in New York, even the team that lost to the Pacers in the second round, it wasn't like amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like, we haven't really seen him play with a great team and some other great players. So I think in the right situation, I'm starting to like Melo just because Phil Jackson, everything's going so bad, and I kind of feel bad for him, and I kind of want to see him have success and at least have a chance to do something in the playoffs.
It's one thing to criticize him on the whatever his criticisms have been, leadership, the defensive end, what we think he's not. But it's another thing to do what I think Jackson's doing to him now, which we both agree that it's unfair. And
yeah,
when I tried out for that, you know, WFAN contest a couple years ago, the point I was trying to make is when have we seen the best of him? We've seen the best of him in the Olympics. Now that team, obviously, and the guys that he's surrounded with, it's a completely different animal. You're looking at some of the best players in the world and LeBron and KD on those teams. But I think in a role in Los Angeles, you would see more of Olympic Melo. First off, the pressure is completely off of him.
And he's probably the third – and he's the third best player on the team.
Arguably, yeah. I mean
– yeah, I would say Chris Paul and Blake are better.
Yeah, you could definitely make that point. I think Melo at his high point has proved that he could be as effective as Blake. But as this point
but
right
he's not
now
– there anymore.
At this point right now, Blake probably more valuable. You're right. But what Melo can mean to that team offensively – and then having to be – he's never had a DeAndre Jordan behind him either. So I think defensively less pressure, just overall, I think it would take a monkey off his back.
Well, yeah, anytime you play with just a group like that, and, you know, they're not counting on Melo to lead them to the win. You know, a lot of the Knicks games, it's like sometimes they just watch Melo.
Hmm.
Maybe not quite as much this season, but in the past it's been times where it's just been, you know, throw Melo the ball on the block and let him work, and you don't see any movement. It's just him one-on-one, and – obviously, that's not healthy for an offense.
Yeah, and when he first got here, it was a motivated Carmelo Anthony that led this team to a couple of playoff appearances. And like you said, when I've been critical, you kind of reeled me in a little bit to realism and say, hey, man, this guy brought some energy back into MSG. Amari was the first guy to make that initial step. And then Carmelo came in 2011. They were in the playoffs. 2012, they were in the playoffs. 2013, they were in the playoffs. So this is a guy that did bring some excitement to the Garden. And I would, for him personally, I think this would be, you know, beneficial. And I think, you know, he'd probably drop a couple of Bs. He'd be in better shape. And with less pressure on him to score the basketball, get up and down with those guys a little bit. You know, those Nuggets teams, and now I know I'm turning the clock back a little bit, but he did play on some exciting, younger, offensive-minded teams in Denver.
Yeah, they were used to running up and down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would enjoy seeing Melo in a different situation. And for the Knicks, it would also make sense because they just need to get things going. And to be honest, they need to get rid of – they trade Melo, get rid of Derrick Rose, or let his contract run at the end of the season. And then they need to find a way to probably move that Joakim Noah contract.
And if I told you something like, how would you feel about a combination of, you know, maybe a PNR of Austin Rivers and Porzingis?
Yeah, that's one of the pieces they have talked about going there. I mean, I think
would thrive in a bigger role.
Yeah, I think Austin Rivers definitely has more potential than we've seen in Los Angeles. Obviously, I think there's a little bit of pressure playing with your dad and then obviously playing behind Chris Paul. So, I mean, I think he had some really good moments in the playoffs too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he would be an interesting piece. And like I said, the Knicks don't have that great of value for Melo right now because of what Phil Jackson's doing. So that hurts as well. So getting something in some draft picks, I think, is important. I think getting, you know, you definitely want to get at least a good young player and a draft pick, a first round pick.
Yeah, definitely. And also with this, we don't know, or certainly I don't know, you know better than me what this Clipper roster is willing to part with.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that Clippers haven't been the best themselves in developing young players. A lot of their rookies don't see much playing time, or I've seen rookies on that team go through their contract and not get picked up afterwards and hardly play at all. So it'll be a tough – I think a third or fourth team would have to be involved to make something work. I think in most cases with a Melo trade, in most cases when you're dealing with such big contracts like Melo's, it's easier when you have a third or fourth team involved. This is when teams come along, though, teams like the Nuggets and the Nets that have like an excessive amount of cap room and they can just eat contracts. This is what's good for them because they can pick up an extra draft pick, an extra player, an extra asset just for having cap space. So they're the kind of teams to keep an eye on. But talking about trade rumors this week, we had some trade talk with the Pelicans. The Pelicans have shown some interest in trading for Jahlil Okafor from the Sixers and Brook Lopez of the Brooklyn Nets. What do you think about pairing AD with an offensive-minded player?
Well, he definitely needs some help, although Jrue Holiday's been very impressive to me this season. And I think
Jrue Holiday's a really underrated defender. Yeah. I've watched him defend really well. He's put up some good numbers, but I've seen him defend on some nights, and he's locked some guys up.
Yeah, they obviously need another piece.
Yeah.
Oh, Holiday, I think, has overachieved this season and missing the first, 12 games because of, you know, tending to his wife. So, yeah, I think the Pelicans could definitely benefit. Who's the other team you mentioned for Okafor?
Okafor and Brook Lopez, the Pelicans have been interested in.
That could be in it. See, to me, Brook Lopez pairing with, you know, Davis could definitely be interesting. I know he played with – now he doesn't – where is that seat, Omar?
He's on the team, but he's just trash. And that's just another terrible contract to a center.
He hasn't been effective. I haven't even heard his name.
Yeah, he doesn't really fit the new NBA. You know, he's just big, doesn't have much offensive game, and he can rebound. I think like you said, Brook Lopez and AD would be pretty fun to watch, especially with Lopez extending his range to three-point line. Like, you could see that combo put up 70 points, like 60 to 70 points a night, you know?
Shout out also to Buddy Hield, who I think is coming to his own a little bit.
Yeah, and add another big man, another presence in the paint that opens up more shots for him.
Yeah, no, he's definitely – he's had his ups and downs like any rookie would. Not exactly the most efficient guy in the world, but I've always felt that he would translate well to the league and eventually – work his way into the rotation, only playing about 20.
Etwan Morris played some good minutes for them, too, at the Pelicans. Terrence Jones has, too. I mean, they've had some guys kind of step up for them.
Yeah, so definitely picked it up since the brutal start.
Yeah, and I mean, getting, like you mentioned, Jrue Holiday coming back makes a big boost to this team. It kind of just gives them that extra juice, the extra confidence. What do you think about the Sixers trading Jahlil Okafor to,
with two?
I'm saying with the Sixers possibly trading him, like that whole situation, how that kind of worked out. Last year, he looked like he was having a great rookie season. Tours his meniscus, has that issue in Boston. Then Embiid comes along and everybody forgets about Okafor.
Yeah, he's had that impact, hasn't he? And he, you know, even though, you know, Okafor hasn't definitely regret, you know, regressed a little bit, I would say.
Yeah, I say what he would say regressed, and it's also come with the less minutes too. And he hasn't really played much at the time. I feel like he only really plays when Embiid is out.
Yeah, and you could he could definitely have that impact. But you know, a guy that we know about in the fantasy guys love, who's definitely been impactful to the 76ers, I think makes it a little bit easier to deal Okafor is Ersan
Yeah, Ilyasova's there. He's been playing well, gives him some hustle, some edge. Rookie Dario Saric has been playing well, and Nerlens Noel has been playing pretty good too. So, I mean, obviously, we knew they were going to move Embiid, Noel, or Okafor at the start of the season. Now we know they're definitely not moving Embiid, but it looks like they'll probably move Okafor. And a team might be able to get a steal with him. You know, like, I'm not saying he's going to go and be an all-star great player, but he's definitely a solid guy who can score in the post. He just needs to improve in his defense.
And the Pelicans have come up, and that's the team that's come up with Okafor the most.
Yeah, that's a team that it was recently 2 days ago, I think, or a day ago. There was talk about them having a possibility of a trade.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know what? That's a team that, you know, started really rough. The Pelican team started really rough, and you know that eighth spot, depending on what they, you know, obviously not going to blow anything up, but depending on what they want to do. The eighth spot is still within reach for a few teams down there, and
A lot of teams, yeah,
yeah.
too many teams. You kind
Yeah.
of didn't expect that, especially from the West.
You
Usually,
could make the argument that, I mean, I would think that let's say that the Timberwolves, Lakers, and the Suns are all, you know, you don't really want to throw the Timberwolves out, but you probably have to. But you know, you could make the argument that with the Timberwolves in there, that six teams are going to battle for one spot.
I mean, I think the T-Wolves kind of are in there. I mean, obviously that Zach LaVine tearing his ACL hurts a lot, so never mind. Maybe that kicks him
Yeah,
out.
that's a terrible injury. You know,
Yeah.
I wouldn't say condolences, but you know, our
I mean,
prayers, you could say our prayers out to Levine, who
I'll give my condolences to the Atlanta Falcons and their fans.
there you go. RIP to the Falcons fans.
Just a quick touch on that. Oh, that honestly, I don't think you could really fathom that as a fan. Like, that's probably one of the worst things you'll endure.
Yeah, I mean, how do you recover?
You really don't, and even as a
I could.
team.
I found I was hard for me to recover. The Giants lost, blew that big lead in the wild card game back in like 2002. So I could, you know, just
Yeah.
thinking about bad losses. I mean, it was hard for me to recover from a regular season loss when you know, the Michael Vick game at the Meadowlands. So I
Yeah.
could only imagine in the Super Bowl. I've never experienced anything quite like that. You know, you had the NFC
NFC
title
champion.
game, but that's
That's
not
still
even,
not the same.
that pales in comparison to this. But
Back to the
the
basketball.
West, back to the West, and that win number. I'm going to give you a number. You tell me over under 37 and a half, the eighth seed in the Western Conference.
I'll say over. I think someone will step up.
Well, if that's going to it's going to have to happen soon.
I'm not like Denver. I feel like they're starting to play good. They have some young pieces. The trick for them is like keeping Nikola Jokic healthy. He's been killing it. That's a kind of like another big up and coming big right there. You know, somebody who's gonna be in the conversation of, you know, Embiid, Porzingis, Jokic, Towns. All these bigs are coming up right now. So that's a guy to keep an eye on. And the Nuggets. The Nuggets are another team to keep an eye on the trade deadline too. There's been some talk about them moving Wilson Chandler. What do you think Wilson Chandler could do to a playoff team? He's been talked about somebody possibly going to the Clippers.
Wilson Chandler a couple years ago, well, he's always kind of battled injuries, but
He's always banged up. Him and Gallinari, it's like a perfect match because they
yeah,
each miss him.
you look at his age and you'd say, you know, Wilson Chandler, he's not that old, but he's kind of, you have to be careful with him. And he's not going to play a ton of minutes. Like, you look, I'm going to quickly check this for a second. Yeah, he's 29, but you wouldn't think that, right? Like,
He's been in the league for a while, it feels like, because he.
he had some, you know, on some of those bad Knicks teams, I think he was all right.
No, he was good on the Knicks for some of those seasons. I mean, he's still pretty good on the Nuggets. It's just like they're never having been a really good team. I'm surprised they haven't tried to trade him last year, even, because I feel like he could give a, you know, add a solid wing and he can kind of even play the four when you need him to. So I thought he was kind of a fit. I would be interested to see him move to one of a team, maybe a team even like OKC or something. And talking about Wilson Chandler, also another guy has been mentioned is PJ Tucker. I think he's another dude, you know, at the small forward position that kind of brings some toughness, some physicality to a team. A team mentioned for him has been the Pacers.
Yeah, and this is like a couple weeks ago. I know he was mentioned like the Knicks trade rumors, but that doesn't seem to be you know.
Yeah, the Knicks will probably go the opposite direction.
That doesn't like they're not going to add on. And yeah, I definitely think that he to me he makes more sense to like a team like the Clippers. Wilson Chandler could spark somebody offensively that I think needs it, but I think the Clippers are more prone to go in the perimeter defense route.
But, Tucker can do that. He really can. He can put a some toughness into your team.
Like Wilson Chandler, I think could help like a Memphis maybe.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
You know, like I would think that he would help the Clippers. I think, you know, the Clippers are definitely a team that needs to, because if you have Redick on the floor, you have Austin Rivers on the floor, you know, you have other, you know, perimeter guards. I know Paul's a pretty good perimeter defender, but I think Tucker could definitely help them.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, he can kind of even play the four a little bit. We saw him like a few weeks ago battle with Karl Anthony Towns and give him fits on the post. Like, he's a tough dude. I remember when Joe Johnson was kind of killing it on the Nets and he would just kill guards in the post. And P.J. Tucker was just like this one guard or small forward that he could not work in the post just because he was so tough. So definitely respect his game.
100%. And I do want to touch on, before we finish up today, I do want to touch on what I thought was the best regular season game of the season so far Monday night on TNT. That was the Wizards and Cavs. And definitely a shout out to the Washington Wizards, their fan base, their organization. Bradley Beal coming to his into his own. Excuse me, I think Gortat's played well. And this is a team that just from the first couple of quarters, I know they didn't finish and they lost on that miracle three by LeBron and probably one of the best imbalance passes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, in that situation too, like
unbelievable. But and it took a monumental effort from Love had 39. LeBron had a great game. Kyrie made his plays. But just from what the Wizards had started with, we harped on our disappointment, and they've answered the bell and then some, won something along the lines of like 15 in a row at home. And I think their role guys like Oubre don't get talked about that much. Obviously, we know Otto Porter's getting some love, but I think just what they've done as a whole to come together and played some pretty exceptional basketball and gave us, I think, the game of the year the other night.
Yeah, I mean, and this could be a possible Eastern Conference Finals matchup. That's how good the Wizards are playing right now. Yeah. John Wall's playing like probably the best guard in the Eastern Conference right now. He's been dominant. Beal, like you said, has been great. Otto Porter's having himself a season. And that was an excellent game. Obviously, LeBron hits that shot. You know, there's some luck in that shot. Obviously, I don't think anybody's like, oh, let me fade away, turn around, bank it off the backboard, three, tie the game.
Well, you obviously never played at my park before. No.
Yeah.
Came over here and played on the island. It happens all the time.
And props to Kevin Love for that pass, like you said. That didn't really get enough love.
Hey, listen.
No pun
intended. Yeah, I mean, we've heard about – I mean, I've always heard – and listen, I've seen it in the league too, but just coming out of UCLA, you're like, yo, this guy could throw like a chest pass to the next area code, and you're like, let me see it. That's on full display there is, you know, a lot of people come out.
Yeah, and that's not easy. Like, that's a difficult thing to do.
I can barely throw a chest pass down the end of my driveway.
I'm not a big fan of like the chest pass like that. He just makes it look like
I gotta go over the head, man. If I'm making that pass, I'm definitely going over the head. My chest pass is gonna die. It's probably gonna bounce a couple times and like fall about around half court. I mean, like if you look at the replay, like effortless chest pass on the dime to LeBron who's on the opposite foul line. Like, are you kidding me?
I know.
That's a joke. But I honestly, like Scott Brooks, too, has done a good job with that group. And I know
he added some defense. I've mentioned this on the show before. I just like that team's defensive potential with Wall, Beal, Porter, Markieff Morris, and Gortat. There's some versatility, too, and some speed and some quickness.
Well, I know he's also taken some heat for how things ended in OKC. Did get them to the finals 1 year. But, you know, to kind of have a rebirth and see how far he could take this group, we've expected the Celtics and Raptors, obviously, to compete to get – you know, the second seed, but we don't really mention the Wizards much.
And there he right there.
And, yeah, a couple games back. And, you know, I think the best matchup to beat Cleveland now, maybe. It's definitely something you have to discuss. And I'm watching them play them the other night, and I'm saying, I want to see this the most, too, because I know what they could do. I know what the Cavs are going to do with Toronto, probably. I think just from a speed and, like, athleticism standpoint, the Wizards present some problems.
Yeah, they do. And, I mean, John Wall's a really good player, too, and – seeing him in the spotlight in a big situation like that could be interesting. So, I mean, I would like to see it. But the one thing the Wizards going to do, though, if they're going to compete with anybody, they need to add to that bench.
Yeah,
they need to add some bench pieces, get something in there. Just, you know, nothing crazy, just some solid vets, you know, keep the thing rolling in case you need someone to come in, play some minutes. Because right now, if they had an injury, they'd be in major trouble.
Yeah, and if I just name you these guards, I know Isaiah Thomas is playing out of his mind. But when I size up, and this is how you have to look at the East, you size up everybody against the Cavs. And just from watching the game the other night, I just like what the Wizards present to them from an athletic standpoint, from a speed standpoint. I look at like guys like Isaiah Thomas, I'm looking at Kyle Lowry, and then I'm looking at John Wall. To me, he's the wild card. He's the one guy that, and I know Love and him and
Irving. I mean, you probably could say Wall has the highest potential out of the three.
Yes.
You know, Wall can be the best out of the three. He's the youngest, and he has the most probably talent. Lowry and has that toughness and that edge. The one thing that I would just – I hate to be a hater, but I would just talk about Isaiah Thomas is his lack of defense.
Yeah. No, you mentioned that before.
Yeah. You know, like no matter how great you are at scoring the ball, you know, you still got to play defense, and John Wall can do that.
Yeah.
And so can Lowry.
I think if you had to choose between those three guys right now, going forward to start your franchise, I think we both agree we're going to take John Wall.
Yeah, I'd go John Wall, Lowry, IT. Yeah. Me.
Oh, no. Don't add him.
Yeah, no, I don't care.
No, you know what? I think I would have to think about IT and Lowry because Lowry, you know, like I've seen the playoffs a couple of times, you know. And you know, I definitely have to think about that one. But the way Wall is going at it right now, that's a bad boy over there in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Wow, wait till this kid, like, when John Wall eventually, like, locks in his three-point shot where it's, like, really consistent and good, if that day ever comes, just watch out for the Wizards.
For sure. We're high on them right now, and they've given us reason to be.
We were early on the hype train about, like, 3 or 4 weeks ago. We started talking about the Wizards, and look where they are now.
Well, if you go back and listen to the preseason, I think I don't remember, like, very vividly, but I just remember thinking that they had the potential of being a home court playoff team.
Yeah, I think they had the potential. I think we talked about Beal being a big wild card, as always, right, for this team. And this year he's been healthy so far. So,
Washington.
Yeah, exactly. But that wraps it up for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and catch us next week.
Yeah, definitely tune in on Saturday because we're going to be discussing what I think is going to be, you know, that can't-miss game of the year so far. I know we just talked about what I thought was a game of the year. But that can't-miss KD going back to OKC, which that first trip that LeBron took back to Miami and LeBron took back to Cleveland after he went to the Heat. So definitely something on Saturday you want to tune into as we break that down. But as always, thanks to all the listeners, the support, Blog Talk. Follow us on OTG Basketball on Twitter, and enjoy the rest of your night, guys.